So we left off last time in the discussion about cooking with microwaves. That was our question. We wanted to know whether it's better to cook for a patient using electric, gas, or microwave. And we had noted, first of all, that with gas, if you're going to require two acts of ignition, one to turn on the pilot flame and then the other to actually ignite the gas, that's already worse than what you're dealing with in other situations. We also noted that in the event that you're dealing with a microwave, so activating the microwave itself may involve biblical prohibitions, depending on how I view the act of completing the circuits to get it going. But if I do it with a shinui, if I do that in an unusual way, he suggested pushing the buttons with the back of one's hand, then you can escape that problem. And so it actually may be better to cook with a microwave. And the reason why it may be better to cook with a microwave goes back to the table that you had on the sheets last week, which I included again this week, in which we said that there's a biblical prohibition against cooking with ash, cooking with fire. And we include within that cooking toldos ash, with things that are descended from fire, which we gave as an example. If there's a fire and the fire heats a kettle, or there's a fire and the fire heats water, that secondary item is also hot, and that's a tolda of the fire. And in the event that that is hot enough, that it will cook whatever is put into it, that will be prohibited. So we talked about, for example, you use the fire and you heated up scarves next to the fire or cloths next to the fire, and then you cracked an egg on those cloths. That's an example of something that would be prohibited as well. We said cooking in the sun, on the other hand, is 100% fine. If you put something out in the sun and it heats to the point of cooking, 100% permitted. And then the last case, the case of debate, was, well, what about something that was heated by the sun? Do I say that just like cooking in the sun is fine, cooking in something heated by the sun is fine? Or do I say that just as cooking with something heated by fire is not allowed, so too cooking in something heated by the sun is not allowed? And we took the view of Rabbi Yossi that, in fact, you are allowed to cook in something that was heated by the sun. But the question was regarding microwaves. Can I say that microwaves are like cooking with the sun, and therefore you're going to be allowed to cook with a microwave on Shabbos, again, assuming that you activate the microwave in an unusual way, so you reduce that part of it to a rabbinic prohibition? Would that be the best way to cook for a patient? So we said, the view of Rav Moshe Feinstein was, and this is on, if you're looking at the Nishmas Avram sheets, we're on page Shin Nun Vav, it's the second side of the first page. The position of of Rav Moshe Feinstein is that Rashi says on the Gemara that the reason why cooking in chama, in solar heat directly, is permitted is because that's not the way we cook. Ein derech bishul v'kach, that's not the way of cooking. So Rav Moshe says if enough people start cooking that way, then that's derech bishul. That's the way people cook. And therefore, he says that microwaves would, in fact, be prohibited. He wrote this in the early days of the proliferation of microwave technology, and he said, the fact that not everybody has them is only because they're not so common, they're not so available. But once they're commonly available, everybody is going to have these things. So he wrote 40 years ago. And sure enough, so that was Rav Moshe's position. But now we wanted to come back to Shlomo Zalman. And so we're in the second column where it says, Me'idach. That's what we're up to. Me'idach, on the other hand, Kosev Agon, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal, Rav Shlomo Zalman wrote, L'hasbir Rashi, to explain that same Rashi. Da'av shekasav Rashi, b'shabbos lametesem et aleph, ahad mevashel b'chama l'chulei al-mashari, dehu mibnei de'ein et derech bishul l'mekach. That even though Rashi wrote in the Gemara in Shabbos regarding cooking in the sun, that everybody agrees it's okay because that's not the way of cooking. Mikomakom nira shegan ba'ofen shekein regilim levashal b'chama. He says, nonetheless, even in a case in which people do normally cook in the sun, kimo dud shemesh, like a solar panel, right? Using a solar panel in which the water passes through and the water is heated by the sun, uchdomen, similar things, gam kein potter, you will also be exempt from biblical liability. Ukedechazinon mechamei Tiberia. He says, I'll give you an example. Look at the case of Chamei Tiberia, the Tiberian hot springs, where the Gemara discusses the question of how I view the hot springs of Tiberia, of Tiberias. do I view them as being heated by underground fire? And therefore, they would be, you know, toldos eish. They'd be a result of being heated by a flame. Or do I view them as being? Well, take a look. You'll see. He says, "The iam rinon." We're on the second column on Shin Nun Vav, in the middle of the column. "The iam rinon the chalfia pischa de gehenom." If you say that they pass by the entrance to Gehenim, which is the Gemara's term for the way they would be heated by the fires of Gehenim, Havalei toldos ur b'chayev. So that would be considered a descendant form of being heated by flame, and therefore you'd be liable if you heated something in the waters of Tiberia. You're not liable for drinking the waters of Tiberia, that it's being heated on its own. But if you were to take the waters of Tiberia, which are themselves fire heated, and heat something else in it, that would be a descendant form of heating something by flame. V'im lav, but if not, havalei toldos chama, that would be a tolda of something heated by the sun. Upater, you'd be exempt from liability. And the point that he's trying to make in this line is that that which is the fact that something that would be heated in the waters. Let's say the waters are not considered fire heated. Let's say they're considered to be heated by the sun. Let's take that view. So if I were to put something in the hot springs to cook it, he says that would be considered a descendant form of chama, and it would be okay according to the view of Rabbi Yossi. So he says that proves to me, that demonstrates to me, that even if something becomes a normal means of cooking, if it's sun-based, if it's solar-based, it doesn't count. And by solar, we mean non-fire. The hot springs of Tiberia are not being heated by the sun. They're underground. They're not being heated by the sun. So the point is, though, that this is considered to be an unusual way of cooking, even if it becomes the normal way of cooking. That's what Shlomo Zalman's point. V'gam chiluk zeh shebein ur v'chama nizgar gam le'inyan pesach matzah v'chala. He says that distinction between that which is cooked by fire and that which is cooked by the sun also shows up in other areas of halacha, in terms of the Karban Pesach, where the Torah says not to eat it mivushal. So the question is, what is mivushal? So they say there, if it's heated by the sun, that's not called mivushal. Matzah, in terms of baking matzah, is that called properly baked? The challah, as well as the obligation to separate challah from your baking, v'hasa ma'inav gamina im regilim b'kachalo. And there's no difference between whether they normally do it or don't normally do it. That's not the issue. The issue is solely the question of, is this considered to be a normal way of... I'm sorry, the issue is not normal. The issue is this a sun-based... Or fire? Is this a fire-based form of cooking, or is it not a fire-based form of cooking? Val karchach de kavanas Rashi bidvarm ela lomar de'ein ze karui bishul. So the upshot of this, what we said now, finishing off the thought from last week, is that it is not called bishul if it's not from a fire, and it doesn't matter how many people normally do this now. It doesn't make a difference. So Shlomo Zalman, in contradistinction from Rav Moshe, says microwave cooking, no matter how widespread it becomes, is not called a normal way of cooking, and therefore it will not carry the same liability as cooking in a fire. And therefore, to go back to the question we're answering, if I have a choice in terms of the ways to heat up food for a patient, my best option on Shabbos is to heat it up microwave. Granted, he has already noted he wants you to push the buttons with the back of your hand, the back of your finger, but that's his preferred mode. So he writes. He then continues with a note in the brackets. We're in the inside column on Shin Nun Vav, the second column on Shin Nun Vav. He says, "V'av she'aminchas chinuch mistapek b'nisbasha b'chama ve'achakach al yedei ha'esh." He says, even though the minchas chinuch is not sure, if something is cooked in the sun and then cooked on the fire, so he's not sure whether that cooking on the fire is now called an act of cooking. On the one hand, I didn't consider cooking in the sun a real act of cooking. On the other hand, it's cooked food. When we deal with cooking, we say that if something is already pre-cooked, it can't be re-cooked halachically. So on the one hand, you'll say, well, it wasn't cooked the first time because it was through the sun. On the other hand, it's clearly cooked food. It's not raw anymore. So Menchas Tinoch wasn't sure how to deal with that. Umevi mea prima gadim, he quotes the prima gadim, shesover de gambaza ein bisholacher bisholayin sham. He says, yeah, in fact, it's not called re-cooking in this case. It's not called an act of cooking in this case. So that sounds like chama is an act of cooking then. Hainu mipnei shekach haislam kabbala dile inyan zeh bo'inan dav gudumia de mishkan shab bishol hayay de esh betoldo seh b'lo hayay de davar achir. He says, that's a whole different story. He says, the reason why, if I take solar cooked food and then heat it in a fire, it's not called bishul, it's because the rule is that it has to resemble the Mishkan, and in the Mishkan, the cooking occurred only by fire without other influences. So even if I don't call the sun bishul, it's still another influence. And so that's a unique case. Don't get distracted with it. I only mentioned it because it's here on the page. But that's what he says. And then his concluding thought, ulefize, based on this, Gam bishul hachut al yedei zerem, gam kin chashiv k'mivashal b'chama. He says, I have news for you. An incandescent light bulb. Right? There's a lot of discussion as to what goes on halachically when you turn on an incandescent light bulb. What would you be in violation of? So one of the popular concerns is that it's called mivashel. It's called bishul. Because the Rambam says that if you heat up metal and you soften the metal, that is bishul. And in fact, some of the metal, it does soften at high temperatures like that. It will soften somewhat. But he says, you know what? That's also not fire. Fundamentally, it's not heated in a fire. It's heated by the electrical current and the resistance. So therefore, he says, that's also going to be chama. And therefore, you won't be biblically liable. That's a side note in there, but it's a very interesting side note. Okay, so that's what he brings from Shlomo Zalman. So the Nishmas Avraham is always going to side, I think, with Shlomo Zalman. And therefore, he's going to tell you, ideally, use the microwave. That's his statement. He then gets into one other technology at the bottom of the page on Shin Nun Vav before he moves on to another discussion. He says, "Ulegabei bishul b'mazleg chashmali." As far as cooking with an electric fork, right? And what he means is an immersion coil, basically, is what he's talking about. It doesn't have to be a fork per se. So he says, see what Rav Shlomo Zalman wrote about it in terms of the debate between himself and the Chazon Ish. The Rav Shlomo Zalman said it's an Isser D'Rabbanan, it's a rabbinic prohibition, and the Chazon Ish said that it's actually a biblical one, it's Eish. So I brought you the debate here because I thought it was very interesting in Source Gimel on the edit sheet. I thought this was a very interesting conversation. Take a look at what happens. He says, "Motzei ani lechon lahodia." He says, "I find it appropriate to inform you of the following." This is a footnote of Rav Shlomo Zalman to a responsum of his. Shebe Yosi Pam Eitzel Maran Bala Chazonish Zatzal. I was once with the Chazonish. Amartila, when I told him, Shamartiach mayim b'shabbos ayde mazleg chashmali. If someone were to heat up water, and martiach is, you know, to the point of boiling, if we were to boil water on Shabbos using an electric fork, sheshnei kitzosav meruchakim, the two ends, the two tines, are distant from each other. V'hamagal notzar rak al yedei hamayim. So it's not an immersion coil, really. It's using the water as the circuit. What's the term for this? Anybody know? There's a term for it. I don't know it. In running a current through water, that's automatically called electrolysis. Okay, good. That's what it is.
I use polished silver.
You used to
right.
Do that, didn't you?
They still do it.
Okay.
That's another story.
So he says where the two ends are distant from each other and the circuit is formed via the water, which causes the water to heat up and to boil. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says, I told the Chazon Ish, I thought that's only a rabbinic prohibition. Since the circuit, the electric current, is not fire, so therefore he is as though he is cooking with a descendant form of solar heat, and there is no sin offering. It's not a biblical liability. I shouldn't say mutter, it's not permitted, but it's only derabanan. V'amarti, and I said, so I said to the Chazon Ish, you know, we should publicize this. The hospital should know, they can use this. V'heshiv li b'pshitos. And he answered me simply, "D'kemosha mavashol b'mayim chamim shem tolda me'esh chayav chatos." He says, just like if you have water that was heated up by a fire, cooking with that water would carry biblical liability. That's the descendant form of fire. So too, if you cook with the electrical current, since normally electrical current, he says, creates fire, so he says, it's sort of like a pregnancy of fire. In other words, fire is latent within it. Just like you're liable for the tolda, if you cook in something heated by fire, so too you're liable, in this case, for heating via this electrical circuit. Because it would normally produce fire. Even though all you did was heat up water, and you didn't actually have any fire created. So Chazon Ish said no. He says this would be biblically prohibited. So then Rav Shlomo Zalman writes, "Me'od hitpaleti lishmoa davar zeh." He says, I was shocked, so to speak, by this statement. "V'yaldus haisavi," and I had a certain youth within me. "Lomar sharak harishonim hayicholim lomar chidush gadol kazeh." I said, I had the hubris to say to Chazon Ish that he had to be a Rishon to say a novel thing like that, that electricity, because it normally creates fire, therefore it's like a latent fire in it. But he responded, "Shaladaita hu pashut," that this is simple. You don't have to be the Rashba to say something like this. I told you you'd enjoy this piece. This is a funny back and forth here. Ulam gam hayom ze temur mod beinai. But Shlomo Zalman says, you know, I'm still surprised by this. Ubefrat shaz derem atzmo rak berutz aso meshafshei humachkame mesachut shemisnagid lo ad shu nefach leur besorif v'nikra'esh. He says the physics doesn't work that way. He says what happens is the circuit, the electrical current, encounters resistance, right, and the friction from that. From this resistance is what causes it to be converted to fire and to burn, and that's what causes eish. Aval agabe hazerem atzmo, but as far as the current itself, lo shayach klal lomar shehu eish lo betchila v'lo besof. He says the electrical current isn't fire; it never was fire. It's the resistance that's going to cause whatever medium it's in to burn. But it's not as though the current ever becomes flame. So Shlomo Zalman was not of this view. Although his Rebbe, the Chazon Ish, certainly was. Okay. One other point that's just a carryover from last week. If you take a look at Tzoris Dalet, Laura asked the question about magnetic induction. Right? Magnetic induction cooktops are... What you have is a setup in which you have two nodes, and if iron is placed upon them, then the iron will heat up. It's through magnetic waves. It's not being done through a normal current. It's the magnetic waves that will heat up the iron. In the event that it's not iron, nothing's going to happen. You can put your hand on it, 100% cold. You put the iron on it, the iron will heat up. And as a result of the heat of the iron, the cooktop will heat up. Only secondarily. Which leads to some very interesting kashering questions. How do you kasher a magnetic induction cooktop? Because the surface itself is only heated indirectly. So can you argue it's what we call Iroi Kli Rishon? When you say that some surfaces are exposed to food, and the food will heat them up. You know, for example, if I had I had hot soup that had been cooked in a pot, and then I pour the soup into a bowl, right? And it turns out something was wrong with the soup. The soup was treif. So the bowl is not a Kli Rishon. It's not a first level utensil. It wasn't on the fire itself. It was heated by exposure to something that had been heated in it, that was then poured into it. So similarly here, the cooktop is only hot by absorption from the pot. Nothing would have heated it up in and of itself. So the kashering discussion is interesting in its own right. But the question was, what about that as a Shabbos option? Is that any better? So the answer is no, it's no better. The magnetic induction is no better. The Rambam writes in Source Dalet, "Hamatich echad b'minei matchus kol shehu." If you melt metals at all. Or you heat up the metal to the point where it glows. And this is what the where Shlomo Zalman was referring to before. So Harizal told us mevashel. That's a descendant form of mevashel, of cooking. You're heating up metal to the point where it glows. So, you know, again, we'd have to go back to Shlomo Zalman in terms of the question of whether this is biblical or rabbinic, whatever you would have, whatever age or comma or whatever it is, but it's still going to be prohibited. So magnetic induction is not an option for Shabbos. I should also note, you don't want one of these for Yom Tov. Because when you put your pot on it, you're creating this from scratch. As opposed to when you leave an existing flame, where you're fine, here, when the pot isn't on it, there's no flame at all. You're creating it anew, so it's actually not good for Yom Tov cooking. Okay. Fine. We continue now. Shin Nun Zayin, page Shin Nun Zayin. Number 4 in the Nishmas Avram. Kibui ha'esh o haktanasi, extinguishing the flame or lowering it. And again, the context of heating up food for somebody who is dangerously ill. So bigmar habishul, he says, when you're done cooking, asur l'chabos kol esh o lahaktina, you're not allowed to extinguish the flame, and you are not allowed to reduce the flame. Lo shel kiras hagaz v'lo shel hakiraim hachashmaliyim. Not if it's gas, and not if it's electric. The microwave is, again, another advantage here. It turns off on its own, and you're done. But the electric and the gas, you wouldn't be allowed to put out, because what's the benefit to the patient? There is no benefit to the patient at this point. I wonder if, hypothetically, if you had a limited resource of gas, and the concern that you're going to need to heat food for other patients in the course of Shabbos, and maybe that will be a different story. You know, like the fellow who goes back to the yeshuv, or back to the kibbutz, because he's the only doctor there. So he has to make sure that he's going to be there on Shabbos in order to be able to be available, aside from the question of whether you can go back or not, leaving that on the side. But for him, there's an added justification, because they may need him. He's the only doctor there. So here, I wonder if you had a possible need of the resource to, you know, for others. But other than that, he says, no, you can't turn it off. Okay. Number 5 is a bit lengthier. Number 5 is the issue which we've already discussed somewhat, of other people benefiting from that food. Right? And we've already discussed. We discussed last week the concern of Gezeira Shema Yarbe. The concern that, in the event that I heat up food for this patient, then somebody else comes along and wants to eat from this meal. The concern is that they're going to say, oh, there are more people around, we shouldn't just heat up the patient's food, we'll heat up more food. And it's all a single act of cooking, and therefore they think they're fine, but in fact they're not. So that's our concern, is that they shouldn't heat up food on behalf of other people, and therefore no one else is supposed to eat from it. So he says here the following. Hanah l'acher me'ochel zel, for other people to benefit from this food. Tavshil omayim, food, water, shebishlam b'shvil cholesh yesh bo sakana, which were heated permissibly for a patient who is dangerously ill. Ein la'achir shum heter lechol min hanoser. No one else is allowed to eat from the leftovers. Gam lo lechol la'achir she'ein bo b'sakana. Even another patient who is not dangerously ill would not be allowed. Parentheses, elem kein ein lo ma'lechol vein akum shiva shalavu ro'o kiyaz mutter lo lechol me'ochel hanishar. He says, the exception to that would be if you had another patient who's not dangerously ill, but has no other access to getting food permissibly. There's no non-Jew who's going to heat the food for him. He doesn't have other food, whatever it is, then he'll be allowed to. And the reason he'll be allowed to is going to come at the end of this segment. So we'll see there why it is that he would be allowed to have the leftovers. But the reason in general is, as he continues to write after the parentheses, Mishum Gezera Shagazu Chazal Shema Yosifu Bishvil HaBari, there's a decree lest they add food for the healthy patient. Clear? Not the healthy patient, the healthy person, or the healthier person. V'kosev Oda Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa. And then he says, the Shmir Shabbos writes the following. Ulefize, based on this, Mashem Vashlem Beit HaChalim Avur Cholesh Yesh Bo Sakana, he says, if they cook in the hospital for someone who is dangerously ill, someone who is not dangerously ill would not be allowed to eat from it. So the practical application actually is very interesting. I hadn't thought about it when we discussed this last week. But let's say you're getting your meal, right? And they heat up you know, a whole bunch of meals, like we were talking about before, Mickey. They take meals for the entire floor, right, and put them in the unit, whatever heating unit it is, to heat it up. And they're not asking about microwaves or whatever else. So you say to yourself, well, they heated up at least one of these meals probably for someone who's dangerously ill. And therefore, it was an okay act of heating up food, and therefore I'm allowed to have my food. But based on this, the answer would be no. Right? Based on this, the answer would be that that's insufficient to permit it because I'm not supposed to benefit from the food that they heated up, even the one they actually heated up for him, let alone these other meals that were along for the ride. Unless you will argue, certainly, you know, in a hospital here in Toronto, that they're heating up meals for non-Jews. But there's no, you know, unless you're going to tell me that because there is a meal that they threw in there that says kosher on it, that therefore they did this for you. Maybe there's a, you know, what I'd like to be able to argue is this act of cooking was an act that was done for a population that is largely non-Jewish. And generally speaking, when they do things for non-Jews, Jews are allowed to benefit as well. That's the general rule. So the question is, could you then say that it wasn't about me, it was about them, and therefore I'm allowed to eat?
Except that they wouldn't likely cook a kosher meal for someone.
Right, but when they turn on the oven, they're doing it for all of them in a single act. It's not, you know, they threw in his, but if they threw it in when the oven was off, and I don't know how they heat up the food.
So the generally a seafood wouldn't apply.
Well, there's no concern about them adding, because the whole act itself was a permissible act. They did it for non-Jews. They didn't do it for Jews. So, if assuming that, they turn it on only after the food is in, the actual act of cooking was done with non-Jews in mind. I mean, I could add another reason to permit, potentially, two reasons to permit. Number one, the patient doesn't order the food, right? The food, there's some, you know, person who's in charge of dietary, and that person tells the technician or whoever it is who's sticking the food in the oven to put in X number of meals, right? This number of no fat meals, or no salt, or whatever. Yeah.
Well, you do order.
You can order, right? Yeah. You can order. It depends on, I guess, on
the ask them?
Yeah. I mean, I would suggest not in this case. Let them send whatever they send, with the understanding that your chart says kosher. So, I'm, you know, and here it's a question of knowing the logistics of what's going on in each individual hospital. But the argument could be made that we say, Amira Lahakum, telling a non-Jew to do something for you on Shabbos is not allowed. Right? It's a rabbinic prohibition. However, this is Amira da Amira. He's not doing it because you told him anything. He's doing it because his non-Jewish supervisor told him to do it. So, in that case, according to, you know, it's a debate, but according to many halachic authorities, this is now not even a derabanan. You know, so, for example, the standard application of that, a person has to leave the hospital on Shabbos. They need to get a ride somewhere. So, rather than you telling someone to call the cab, right? If someone who isn't Jewish, let's say the person who is, you know, who is releasing you from the hospital, if they tell the nurse to make the phone call, then the person making the phone call is not doing it because of you. They're doing it because the nurse told them to do it, and so therefore it's a step removed. So maybe you could make that argument as well, where the food is heated up, that it was heated up not because you said anything, but because whoever's the head of the commissary told them to do it.
So, if I'm not mistaken, at Sunnybrook, the trays come up in this big wagon, and then there's a room where they plug it in and heat it up. Or am I wrong?
I never was.
So that.
Don't
is
know how the meals get there.
Okay, so that. I mean, my mother.
Some things you're better off not knowing.
So that's what I think happened. So you're saying they're heating it up for everybody.
Yeah.
And that works.
That's what it sounds like. That's what it is anywhere else. I don't know. I don't want to look into it. As a matter of practice, it's worth investigating. But there's also an added component, which I think Mickey mentioned or Albert mentioned last week, which is that they're not cooking things. They're warming things up. The food is 100% edible, as much as hospital food is edible, in its preheated form. They're not actually doing any cooking, and that may also be a factor.
Like an airplane meal.
Yeah. So that, I think, would also play a role in potentially permitting. There was no visual. So that's another aspect of this. Okay. So he then, after having quoted this from Shmuel Shabbos Kehilchasa to say that what they heat up for the dangerously ill patient may not be eaten by the one who is not dangerously ill, he then quotes you Rashi and Shabbos. So if you take a look at the side sheet for a second to see the Gemara and the Rashi that he's talking about. First, the Gemara and Shabbos, source Hay. You have a city with a mixed population, Jews and non-Jews. And there's a bathhouse in it, and it's open for use on Shabbos. So in order for there to be a bathhouse, there must be somebody who is heating up the water in the bathhouse and is lighting a fire. Imrov Nachrim, so if the population is majority non-Jewish, mutar their chutzpah miyad, so a Jew would be allowed to bathe there right after Shabbos is over. There's no problem in bathing there right after Shabbos. Why? Because they don't turn on the flame for you during Shabbos. Imrov Yisrael, if it's mostly Jews, yamtin b'chdei sheyech muhammed, then you have to wait after Shabbos long enough that they could have heated it up after Shabbos in order to ensure that Jews will not tell them to do this on Shabbos. So Rashi writes about waiting long enough that it could have been heated after Shabbos. The idea is that you shouldn't benefit from the fact that they heated it up on Shabbos itself. And so too in all acts of Shabbos, all malachos performed on Shabbos. The Chachamim said, wait long enough that it could have been done after Shabbos. He says here, in the case of the bathhouse, they do the same heating, whether it's one person or 100 people. They turn on the same flame, they use the same fuel. They heat it all at once. Uketani imrov Yisrael, and it says, if they're majority Jewish, dehavadumya demakiro, because then it's as though the person heating it knows you. Meaning, the classic case in which you're not allowed to benefit from it is where the guy who's lighting it knows you and says, I'm doing this for you. So if it's mostly Jews in the town, that's equal to the case in which he knows you. Because he thinks to himself, I'm doing this for this Jew. Usher, then it's prohibited. Even though the Jew was not present when this happened. So what we've seen here is the rule of the bathhouse and having to wait after Shabbos, assuming that it's a mostly Jewish clientele. Clear? We're clear on that case? So now go back into the Nishmas Avram, where he says, we're in the middle of the inside column, the first column on Shin Nun Zion. Ulam, however, he says, Ayin b'Shabbos kufcha b'ezem, but Aleph see the Gemara in Shabbos on the Rashi, which we just saw. Le'in chimum merchatz, regarding heating up a bathhouse. Umashma dehave dumya dener. So there, we seem to equate heating up the bathhouse with lighting a candle, in the sense that it's a single atomic act. Da'amar Rava, where Rava says, ner le'echa, ner le'meya. If he lights a candle for one person, it's the same candle he would light for 100 people. Meaning, what he's talking about is, in the event that the non-Jew comes into the room and wants to read, and he lights a candle for himself to be able to read, the Jews are allowed to read by that light as well, because he didn't light anything additional for the Jew. There's no concern there of, well, maybe he's going to do more, you know, for you. Ulafize. So he says, based on that, so he says, in that case, if there was a need to heat up a kettle, right, electric kettle for somebody who was dangerously ill, so he says, when you use that, I'm not sure he's talking about a kettle or he's talking about a panel. solar panels are a dud shemesh, but I think he means a kettle, like electric kettle. I think that's what he's talking about. So he says the way that you use, you know, an urn, a kettle, is that it has to be filled with water. You don't heat it up with a tiny quantity of water in it. You'll ruin it. So he says, this Gemara has a very interesting novelty. The Gemara says to me that where there is only a single action that is done, you are allowed to benefit from it, even if you are not the mutter clientele. Right? That's the idea. The bathhouse case, so you're allowed to benefit from it right after Shabbos. So he says, the same thing is true regarding the patient with the kettle. If they heat up a kettle, and they weren't going to heat up less water, there's no way. It had to be full. So this sounds like the single serving meal that we were talking about. Very often, it can't be done empty. So it could be then that a healthy person would be allowed to benefit from the hot water. He quotes the Sefer Tehillim of David on this point. So you follow the novelty that he's suggesting. It is essentially the single serving meal that we talked about. The question of the single serving meal was discussed last week. When we say that you're concerned that you shouldn't heat up a the non-patient shouldn't eat the leftovers because of a concern that maybe they'll make extra for the patient in order to provide for him. So the question was, well, what if all your meals are single serving meals? They're not going to heat up half a meal for the patient, and they're not going to give you an extra meal for the guest because hospitals don't do that. So therefore, you can argue that it should be okay to eat his leftovers. So that argument may be analogous to what they're talking about with the kettle. They're never going to heat up the kettle with less than a full kettle anyway. They're not going to heat up a second kettle for you. So therefore, he says, it would be okay to have the hot water that was heated up for him. So you can imagine the case. You're with a patient on Shabbos. They want to bring the patient hot water. Let's say, I mean, it's a dangerous little patient. I don't know if it's such a good idea to give them boiling hot water, but maybe they do. They give them tea or whatever it is. And there's some hot water left in the cup. You know, they poured it in for him, and there's some hot water left. So maybe the argument would go that it's okay for you to be able to use the hot water, too, that was heated for the patient. And he says, "Ve'ein lasor mishum ribui b'shiurin," and we wouldn't prohibit it because of concern that they're doing extra. Mishum shemashiras habarza patuach zman yoser mishetzarech avur cholash yesh bo sakana. The fact that they leave the spigot open longer than they would for just this patient. Deshamati me'agon or shlomo zaman or batzatzal to lomatzino iser lasor mishum ribui b'shiurin alahechashu osem ma'ase biyadayim. He says no, and this is why I thought it might be a panel. What he's describing is that they leave the spigot open and therefore extra water flows through and is heated. So that's why I thought it might be some kind of a running supply. But his point is still the same. His point is, I think he must be talking about a boiler rather than a kettle, and that's why you have this concern. But he says, Rosh Shlomo Zalman said, the issue of ribui b'shiurin, that they're going to add to the supply, only applies if they would be doing an action of adding. Kamo mamid kedera la ish, like putting a kettle on a fire. V'yeshba ochal yosem ishachol etzarech, with more food in it than the patient needs. Mashenkin kan, shino ozem isekol ikar. But here he's not doing an action. He's simply leaving it open. In other words, let me make sure that we're being clear on our case. There's a boiler, right? The boiler is heating up hot water, which the patient who is justified in getting it needs. They don't empty out the boiler. I think it is talking about a boiler. They don't empty out the boiler and just heat up what the patient needs. They run the boiler and it heats up the water, and this patient is now going to get some of the water. And they simply leave the tap open, and now somebody else is going to be able to drink too. So he says that seems to be okay because they're heating the water just the same. And don't tell me that they're now heating extra because he left the tap open, because that's inaction. That's leaving the tap open is inaction. It was already opened on behalf of this patient. And he says, you see, this idea, Matzinu Svarazu, Bor Sameach, he quotes you the Or Sameach on the Rambam saying that. Aval, however, he says, Nira Diesh Ligzor, Shalo Yavo Lakami Madud Bemakum Shechol Mahachim Sir Katan. However, he says that you should nonetheless be concerned and make a decree not to do this, lest they heat up the big supply instead of a small kettle. Right? Because there is a Shema Yarva. They might heat up a larger unit than they need. Ayin Aruch HaShulchan Shin Yud Ches Siv Tes Zayin. And he says, see the Aruch HaShulchan, which we'll see in a second. V'shahani Hasam B'hai Demerchat Mikim Shanas L'Yidei Nachri. He says, the bathhouse is altogether different because it's one level removed because it's a non-Jew who is doing the heating. But what he's talking about here with the Aruch HaShulchan is discussion about a samovar. If you take a look at Zayin on this side sheet, he says, Vida, you have to know, Shashamati Misha Ritzonam Lomar, I've heard some who want to say, Diha Idna Kishama Amidim Mulyar, that today when they set up a Mulyar, which is Shakarin Samovar, Lachola Bishamas, the Mutter Lavari Lishdoso, some people say that if they set up a samovar for the patient on Shabbos, a healthy person is allowed to drink too. Just like when it comes to shechting an animal, if they shechted an animal for the patient on Shabbos, it's one action. They're not going to do an extra action for the healthy person. You needed a single act of shechita. So too, you can't cook just a little bit of water in the kettle, in the samovar. You have to fill it. Because otherwise, you would damage the copper. And so to the grass, which we call tea. You can't be precise and just put in enough tea for one person. So they make more than the patient is going to use. Because we know you can't do it in any other way. So there's no concern that they might add more for this non-patient. And if you're going to tell me, well, wait a minute, they're all sitting around, everybody else in the room is drinking in addition to the patient, and now the result is going to be that they're going to run low on water, and they're going to add water, and add grass, meaning tea. He says, no, she says, that we're not worried about. No one has ever been worried that guests are going to show up and now they're going to make an entirely new kettle. The only concern we had was when you're heating for the patient, you might come to add a little bit more. But people aren't going to actually, you know, heat up a whole new kettle. And if you'll say, well, they normally put up a small kettle for the patient, now they're going to put up the big samovar, why should we be concerned for that? Maybe then you also have to be concerned they're going to shech the bigger bird. Now, I'm not sure that actually makes a difference, shechting a big bird versus a small bird. The shechita is still a single act, but that's its own discussion. He says, oh, the Chobalabai is Mamit Tamir Amuyar Shalom Yuchal Abeisal. Further, it's not as though people have small, medium, large. They have their samovar, and that's what they use. So until now in the Aruch HaShulchan, it sounds like he's going to be fine with everybody else drinking. Umikomakom lo neir lahatir. But he says, no. Dezek karov ma'od shimnatu lebriyam yishtu kama b'nei adam. He says, it's very likely that the result will be that many people are going to drink. Right, if you have in shul, the question is going to be, so where is there somebody who's dangerously ill so that we can all have fresh tea? Then you're concerned they are going to add a lot more water, they'll add more tea. So we did not permit. So the upshot of the Aruch HaShulchan and what the Nishmas Avram says is that he doesn't like the idea of other people using the leftovers. Right? That's the upshot. He doesn't like the idea of other people using the leftovers. Even where it's a single atomic act, you're doing this one act of heating, he's concerned about the possibility that they're going to add as more people are going to get involved in the in coming to eat, in coming to drink. Nonetheless, the point that he made before still stands. The point about the case in which you can't add I don't see why that is negated. You know, this is all well and good, but it still only applies where there's a possibility that they might come to do something. In other words, make a bigger kettle instead of making a smaller kettle. To give the case that the Aruch HaShulchan just gave. In the meal case, I still don't see an analogous thing.
Right, because it's still the same.
Right. So the fundamental rule is we're seeing two questions you have to ask. Question number one is, would they be doing an extra act on behalf of this person? And question number two is it possible to create a case in which they would be adding, in any likelihood? They might be adding on behalf of the others who are joining in. But if the answer is no to both, then I don't see a concern. And that takes us back again to our single serving food case. Are we clear? Long day at work, but we got it? Okay. His last point just clarifies something he said earlier that I said he was going to come back to, back in the Nishmas Avraham again. If you see where paragraph 6 starts and you go up from there, about 6 or 7 lines, middle of the line, Vekosev Hashmir Shabbos Gelchasa. He's going back to the question of not use by a visitor who's healthy, but use of the food by a patient who is not dangerously ill but has no other access to food. So the Kosev Hashmir Shabbos Keilchasa, the Shmir Shabbos Keilchasa writes, V'im ein l'chola she'evo sakana malecho, if a patient who is not dangerously ill has no food, v'ein nochri she'evasho havuro, and there's no non-Jew available to cook for him, ayin sham v'prima gadim, see the prima gadim, mitzvah zazah, beis, shemati lecho min ha'ochel hanishar. He permits eating from the leftover food, delo geria mishar isur derabanan shi'itirula, because it's no less than any other rabbinic prohibition. Meaning, if I had a patient who was not dangerously ill, but he needed food, I would permit him to have food with an isur derabanan. He could ask a non-Jew to eat food for him. So what's the difference between that and allowing him to eat food from b'chol sheyesh bo sakana? There's no difference. So therefore, he would be allowed to eat. And that, again, is another mitigating factor for our question. Remember the question that we asked. Right? Let's do a little bit of review since we're reaching the end of today. First of all, we finished up the microwave topic. And we said Rosh Shlomo Zalman is of the belief that even when microwaves become common, nonetheless, it's not called derech bishul, and therefore it will only be rabbinically prohibited. And assuming you push the buttons with the back of your hand and so on, that's better potentially than electric or gas heating of food. That was the first point that we did today. The second point, and then we discussed a little bit the magnetic induction and the fork and the debate between Rosh Shlomo Zalman and the Chazon Ish. We said diminishing the flame or turning it off once you're done cooking for the patient would not be allowed. That's not something you can do. In terms of other people benefiting, we said you have two questions you have to ask. Are they adding for me? And is there potential that if I eat, if other people do join in, that could lead to people, in fact, eating extra? That's a separate question. And then his last point, that the patient who is not dangerously ill and with no other food options, would be allowed to use leftovers from the food that was heated for the patient who is dangerously ill, takes us back to our question about the patient on the ward who would like to have the food that they heated up for him, and say, well, they heated it up for people who are dangerously ill, and I was just along for the ride. So we already gave certain mitigating factors, right? We said they're not heating it for him directly. They're heating it for the sake of the general non-Jewish population. That was one mitigating factor. We said that another is that it's really a single atomic act, because they just plug it in, and everything is being heated at once. We noted as well that it's not really his instruction. The person who, the tech who does it, is being instructed by somebody within the commissary system. And now we add the other point, which is he doesn't have any other food. And therefore, in general, we'd be justified in allowing him to eat for a derabanan. And therefore, that's another reason why we would, I think, allow him to eat. It's still an interesting question, but I think that's the way we would go with it. What we'll do, hopefully, next time is talk about, well, next week there is no shir. Next week, we're having instead at 8 o'clock the medical halacha with CME on medicine in minors and who decides within halacha. And then after that, though, November 9th, I guess, we'll talk about the issue of tasting food. in other words, as you're cooking it for the patient, are you allowed to taste it? We'll deal with the question of whether the food is muktza for people besides the patient. We'll deal with heating water up for patient to bathe the patient, and there's more to see here. One of the things that